During the aftermath of one of the nation's worst natural disasters, one company rose above others to rebuild and help reestablish the lives of its workers and their families. Hurricane Katrina left thousands homeless and entire cities ravaged in its wake. But a sense of family at the heart of the Domino Sugar Refinery near New Orleans fostered a team rebuilding phase that took only months to get it going again, defying odds and proving wrong many predictions that it couldn't be done. At the heart of it all, the co-owners of the facility, including Florida Crystals, a family-owned company, and the Sugarcane Growers Cooperative of Florida, a farmer-owned sugar company that sprouted years ago from the rich, productive shores of Florida's Lake Okeechobee. This is the story of that cooperative and the standards of pride, tenacity, guts, family, and community of those farmers who built it. Only two of its original 1960 founding board members remain here today to share how their family histories intermingled to play a key role in the development of this unique and successful family farmer-owned cooperative, a cooperative that's had a big impact on the nation's sugar industry as a whole. Belgrade area farmer Fritz Stein is vice president and secretary treasurer of the cooperative. His grandfather immigrated to the U.S. through New York City from Latvia in 1915, migrating first to Wisconsin, then to the southwest Florida coast, where he farmed for a bit there until, Stein explains,
a great uncle who got into the Glades somehow wandered off down here, and he wrote my granddad a letter, told him to sell whatever you have in Manatee County and come down here. Said you can put a seed in the ground here and it'll bear fruit without any fertilizer. So he apparently got rid of everything he had in Manatee County and came down to Lakeport, and there they hired somebody to barge him across to Kramer Island, and brought his family and their belongings and their milk cow and all that. And from Kramer Island, they migrated into the uplands, I guess you'd call it, the highland outside of the lake.
And that upland area was then called Chosen, and it's where Stein's ancestors planted Florida roots, for many years growing vegetables like others in the area, then sugar as the family farm history evolved. It's the saga of how area farmers got into sugar that's key to this story. You see, even though South Florida became known and remains famous for vegetable production, farmers then knew, as they know now, vegetables can be very risky as a business proposition. Sometimes they make a profit, other times Mother Nature wins, and it can be very painful financially, sometimes overnight, literally, when things like freezes destroy entire crops. It was the search for farm stability then that became fuel for a business plan that would forever impact the area's agriculture and the nation's sugar industry. Sugarcane Growers Cooperative of Florida President and CEO George Wedgeworth has been navigating the cooperative's helm since shortly after it became reality in 1960, based on a business plan he originally wrote to organize area farmers to get them heavier into the sugarcane business. Wedgeworth's family is also heavily intertwined in the region's agriculture history. His father, a plant pathologist educated at Mississippi State and Michigan State Universities, moved to the Glades around 1930, working at the University of Florida Ag Experiment Station in the Glades. His dad discovered the importance of manganese to make more local soils work for vegetable production. Acting on that knowledge, he then gathered some college buddies to help in a land investment, and that's where the Wedgeworth family's agriculture history took root, primarily at first in the celery deal. In the mid-1930s, George's dad built the first packing house with its own ice plant and began hydro-cooling produce for shipping. But tragedy struck the family.
He lost his life by an accident building an ice plant. That was in 1938, and that's when my mother took over the business, which many people said that she wouldn't be able to do it, but she fooled everybody. So my mother actually ran the business from the time I was 10 years old on through me getting out of college in 1950, and she was successful in not only keeping the business, but expanding the business.
George's mother, Ruth Wedgeworth, herself became a regional legend in agriculture circles. A now popular Florida Leadership Institute was later started in her honor. Meanwhile, when George returned home from college, the mother and son team acquired more property and continued expanding the Wedgeworth family farm. George shared many of the same concerns of other area farmers, though. During the 1950s, vegetables, albeit risky, remained the major crops of the area, but that would soon change. George continued to ponder the many risks of vegetable farming and looked for an alternative.
The thing that played on my mind more than anything else was vegetable operations were almost like going to Las Vegas. You could make good earnings one year and then lose it all the next, and it was back and forth. It was not a comfortable feeling to be in an erratic type market where you could make a bundle and lose a bundle.
Sugar cane was proven to grow well in the area, but milling capacity limitations restricted cane acreage that farmers could viably grow. Also, keeping an eye on politics, Wedgeworth realized opportunities could be knocking if area farmers could band together and build their own sugar mill to grind more cane.
Looking at what was going on in the domestic sugar industry, I felt the government was going to have to open up the quota situation because Puerto Rico was failing to fill their quota, and consequently the domestic sugar producers would get out from under government marking allotments and acreage controls. We bet on that, and that turned out to be true.
So with a twist of fate and irony that sugar could enter the picture to help better stabilize vegetable producers and a dream to put it all together, George Wedgeworth conceived a business plan and began peddling it to his farming neighbors. This is where old schoolyard chum Fritz Stein began playing his critical role in the cooperative's development, as Wedgeworth explains.
We were in high school together. We've known each other ever since we were kids. I don't know exactly how to say this, but in the organizing efforts, I'm a little more direct-spoken than Fritz is. Fritz, he's always sat on my right-hand side. That's his seat during every board meeting we've ever had. And he is great not only in meetings but outside of meetings, of calming some of our members of our board and others down where I might have stepped on their toes. Fritz was very instrumental in keeping the group together.
Asking Fritz Stein for his comments about those early discussions among area farmers, he says,
he didn't have that book then. Basically, he had a captive audience of broke farmers, and we were hunting some stability is what we were hunting. George put it together. We fell in line. We fell in line because we wanted a stable operation, and that's what developed.
And so went the early beginning, the farmer discussions and recruitment phase, with these two lifelong friends working in tandem, smoothing moods, schmoozing egos, and calming rivalries in the Florida Glades region, knowing full well it had to be an area-wide effort to make it work. You had to be a farmer, any kind of farmer, to be able to pledge for shares and make a sugarcane crop commitment to the new cooperative. And eventually, 50-plus area farmers joined the plan. George was not the very first chairman of the board, but when early differences erupted among different factions of area farmers, he was put into the chairman, president, CEO seat, and he's been there ever since. Once the farmer commitments were in hand then, the challenge became finding seed capital to finance the building of the mill to support it all. About that stage of the plan, Fritz Stein says this about his friend George.
He was the one that was burning up the shoe leather. He made many, many trips all over this country.
And although securing the necessary financing was no easy task, Wedgeworth succeeded, with 58% of the needed capital finally assured through the Columbia Bank for Cooperatives in South Carolina. Wedgeworth attracted the rest from other places, including some sugar trading interest in New York, a loan from the builder of the mill, and even a few preferred shares were allotted for the engineer who worked on the facility as part of his compensation package.
Our total budget was around $13.6 million. You know, for a group of vegetable farmers to come up with, that sounds like peanuts today, but back in those days, $13 million was quite a challenge. But we financed this with only 20.5% equity money from our growers.
Securing that original seed financing took finesse, persistence, dedication, and background stories on all the cooperative's farmer members. Wedgeworth refers to that original business plan document and reads just one of those descriptions.
A. Duda, for instance, I say, principals are brothers, Andy Jr., John, Ferdinand, largest celery producers in the state of Florida, also large producers of sweet corn, salad crops, cabbage. They produce vegetables in Belgrade, Oviedo, Zellwood, and also large holdings in citrus and cattle. And I'll go through every one of our members so the bank would know what each individual original stockholder, who they were, something about them.
And those original loans, by the way, were repaid faster than promised, too, and the original plan expanded to build a bigger mill even before the first build-out plan was completed, as with any new venture, securing that seed financing was but one of what would become many defining moments yet to come in the cooperative's development and its eventual history. One interesting story came when the cooperative decided to join some other sugar interests in the area to establish their own shipping terminal at the port of Palm Beach to be able to market their own raw sugar and blackstrap molasses. Wedgeworth says the refiner, who had been buying their sugar up to that point, tried to derail the whole effort, sending the Glades farmers this strong message.
If you do that, we'll never buy another pound of sugar from you. Well, I took that as a threat, and we went ahead and did it.
And Wedgeworth says he has a lasting memory of when the same person, not too long after that, invited him and the other key players in the port expansion deal back to Savannah to mend the fences, so to speak.
And I'll never forget, we flew to Savannah and sat down, and he apologized, and took us to dinner, and he had a toast, we're back together again.
The Sugarcane Growers Cooperative of Florida has had many challenges and successes, all the while its founder George Wedgeworth remaining focused on the goal of vertical integration to assure the cooperative and its members could eventually control their own destiny.
We here at this table had decided that vertical integration was in our long-term interest, and not get under the thumb of only having one customer.
Through eventual purchases of sugar refineries then, and partnerships like the one with Florida Crystals, with whom they together own the Domino operation, the cooperative continues to develop to meet the needs of its members, its workers, and the consumers who buy their products around the world. There are so many meaningful stories we could tell about this cooperative and the dozens of family farmers who created it and continue to operate it to this day. Stories of running into people in elevators who ended up being players in major expansion projects. Stories about dealing with government decisions and changing the business model along the way to keep the cooperative strong despite major changes in the business climate. Maneuvering the company's structure and going international to compensate for events like the North American Free Trade Agreement, or dealing with major environmental initiatives as society over time changes the way it views the land and the people farming it. Meanwhile, Americans' buying habits have changed too, from buying their groceries from small local stores to the way it is now, where most of us get what we eat from big chain stores or by eating out altogether. These two gentlemen, childhood buddies from similar family farm backgrounds, key to it all, and with pride and conviction they continue working together to guide the cooperative they worked so hard to grow over nearly half a century. They continue to lead the way for others to follow, working within their communities as food-producing professionals, farmers who care about their industry, their neighborhoods, and their employees. About the importance of community education, Fritz Stein simply states,
"We're heavily involved in education in the Glades and the high schools and in the community college, and politically we're involved. It's important that we serve on these boards in different community functions."
And thinking back on it all, while also still looking ahead, there's George Wedgeworth, whose original concept and business plan started it all.
Fritz and I are the only two survivors of that original 11-man board. We're the only two survivors. But, you know, next year, that'll be 50 years.
For The Hand That Feeds Us, I'm Gary Cooper reporting.